coming, it's rolling around a bend. And I ain't seen the sunshine since I don't know when. I'm stuck in Folsom Prison, and time keeps dragging on.
This is America Weekend. I am Paul Harris. That, of course, is Johnny Cash. Folsom Prison Blues.
On down to San Antone.
Johnny Cash died 10 years ago this week, and my next guest has written what is already being called the definitive biography of the man in black. Robert Hilburn was a music critic for the LA Times for over 30 years. He's written about thousands of musicians in his career. He did books about John Lennon and Bruce Springsteen, and now he has a new one called Johnny Cash, The Life. Robert, welcome to America Weekend.
Hi, Paul. Good morning. It's just amazing to think that I was actually there with Johnny Cash at Folsom Prison in 1968 when he did that concert. I was just a beginning reporter at the LA Times, but what amazing beginning.
And in fact, you were the only reporter covering that concert, right?
Yeah, because the record company didn't invite music writers the way they would now because they were afraid John might show up stoned and they would have to cancel the concert and they would get bad publicity.
Tell me a little bit about the background of how he ends up performing in Folsom Prison.
He had, he had written the song, and he had played at a couple of prisons before that show, and the response was so enormous. It was just the prisoners identified with his music. He identified with the strife, the hard times of the prisoners. It was an electric atmosphere, and he thought if he could just capture that on record, that would propel him from kind of a top-level country star to a real international superstar, and it did that.
You know, there's a line in the song, "I shot a man in Reno just to watch him die." And on that recording at Folsom Prison, the audience, made up of convicts, they cheer at that line. And it's always sent a little chill down my spine.
Yeah, that was an amazing moment because it was just well, I remember first hearing that line on the radio. I was a teenager, I was getting ready to go to school, and I heard that line, and I couldn't believe it, hearing "I shot a man in Reno just to watch him die" on the radio. I didn't know you could say that in a song. I thought that he was going to get in trouble for that.
He did actually get in a little bit of trouble for the song, not for that, but wasn't he sued for plagiarism?
Yeah, what happened was he heard a song in the Air Force called Crescent City Blues, and it is very similar. It starts off, there's a train a-coming, it's coming around the bend, I'm stuck in Crescent City, since I don't know, it's about a woman singing about her boyfriend had left her. And he took about 60% of the words, pretty much the same melody, and then he changed it to a prison setting, and he changed the whole nature of the song when he added that line about "I shot a man in Reno." But Gordon Jenkins, a famous composer and arranger who finally heard the song after the album was a success, sued him and got $75,000 for copyright infringement.
Oh, he essentially said, "All right, you know what? I'll take the rights of the song. You take the money, and we'll call it done."
Yeah, right. Gordon Jenkins could have demanded co-writing credit on the record, but he never did. So if you look at the record today, it still says J.R. Cash.
My wife and I were in Memphis a couple of months ago on vacation. I'd never been there. And, of course, one of the stops we made was at Stax Records, and the other one was at Sun Records, these two great places that were important for music in the 50s and 60s. And Sun Records and Sam Phillips, its owner, they were very important to Johnny Cash's early career, weren't they?
Yeah, and it's such an amazing thing, that Sun Records. When you walk in that room, it's no bigger than maybe a large bedroom somewhere or a living room. It's a tiny room, and you can imagine Elvis Presley and Johnny Cash and Jerry Lee Lewis and Roy Orbison and Charlie Rich and Carl Perkins, Howlin' Wolf, B.B. King, all made music in that little room. And the great thing about Sam Phillips was he would look at different artists who came in, and he could find the individuality in that person, and he would stress that. He wouldn't try to make them all sound like, say, someone who was recording in Nashville. He was looking for strong, independent artists that had a strong emotional and content.
It's a fascinating place to visit because you're actually in the same room that those guys were at that time and can stand where they stood. And to hear the stories of what went on then. What did Sam Phillips mean for Cash's career?
Well, I think Johnny Cash, he wants to be a gospel singer. He wants to be a country singer. He goes in the Air Force, thinks about it for 4 years. When I come home, I'm going to do that. But when he comes home, he doesn't go to Nashville, where everybody would have gone if you were trying to be a singer. He goes to Memphis because he can get a job there. His brother will help him get a job. And the day after he arrives in Memphis from Germany, Elvis Presley records his first recording. And John, a few weeks later, hears on the radio this record, and he loves the record, and it says it was recorded in Memphis's own Sun Records. So, wow, he goes over to Sun Records, knocks on the door, and says, "Would you listen to me, Mr. Phillips, and see if you get me a contract, too?" And it takes a while for Phillips to actually listen to him, but when he does hear him, he's not a great singer, Johnny Cash, but there's something about him that sounds believable, sounds like authority. And so he says, "If you write a song, I'll record you." Now, in the movie, it had him singing Folsom Prison Blues. That's not right. He hadn't even written Folsom Prison Blues yet. He sang Hey Porter for him, Sam Phillips, and that's the song that Hank Phillips signed him for.
In writing this biography, did you find it hard to separate fact from fiction? And I'm asking
absolutely.
In particular...
People remember things differently. You know, Paul, they don't... You know, in the best of... If a person was trying to tell you the truth, they still remember, they see things differently. But also, it was hard. You couldn't believe what Johnny Cash said. As a reporter on the L.A. Times, I thought if you interviewed somebody, you had the absolute truth. You know, you didn't have to worry about it. But I found that John would tend to dramatize things. There was usually a germ of truth in what he said, but he would change it to make it more dramatic. And that happened time after time after time. So you had to check everything he said over and over again.
I asked you that because of a story in the book that made me smile. The story about his experience in the Nickajack Cave. Would you share that with my audience?
Yeah, there was a cave, series of caves in Chattanooga that go on for miles, I guess, and he would go there a lot because he liked to look for old relics, you know, like old coins and things or old guns and things people might lose. And he was at just about the worst point in his life in 1967. This is just a few months before the Folsom concert. The drugs are terrible. He's been arrested again for drunkenness and so forth, and he spends the night in jail, and he thinks about committing suicide. Okay, now rather than saying that, though, I thought about committing suicide, he says he crawled into these caves and said, "I'm going to go as far in there as I can until I get lost. I'm going to die there, and no one's ever going to find me." So, but then what happens is he says he crawled in the cave for an hour, and gradually, just when he laid down to die, a wisp of wind comes up and leads him to the exit, and June Carter and his mother are waiting there, and they get him off drugs. Well, the truth is that cave was 6 feet underwater at the time he said he crawled in there, and indeed he did not get off of drugs after that day. It was another year before he got off drugs.
You write it.
It was after Folsom Prison. I mean, he was still taking drugs when he was at Folsom Prison.
Yeah, you write in depth about Cash's addictions in the book. Those addictions had to be exacerbated by his life on the road, right?
Well, no, that's the reason people started taking the pill, the amphetamines. It gave him more energy. But most people, maybe, so almost everybody in country music was taking, in the 50s, was taking pills, the late 50s, early 60s. But they would take, to help them the long drive between, say, Atlanta and Dallas for the next show. And they used to even have a saying, like they would ask, "How far is it from Atlanta to Dallas?" And they'd say, "Two pills." Now, when John started taking him, he had this addictive personality. He would take 5 and 10 and 20 sometimes. And it wasn't just because of the energy. He was trying to block out a lot of pain in his life, partially caused by he never felt he had the love of his father. His father one time told him he wished his older brother dies. His father tells him, "I wish you had died instead of your brother." That's a terrible thing to say to a young boy. I mean, can you imagine? And then later, he abandons his family. He and his wife are fighting all the time because she wants him to stay home. He wants to go out and try to make his career in country music. So he feels he's abandoned his children, and that gets worse and worse as the 60s go along. So he's not just trying to get energy. That's maybe 20% of it. 80% is blocking out the pain.
Do you think that Johnny Cash could be a success today, Robert?
Oh, sure, sure. I think it'd be hard in today's country music because it's all spectacle. It's not so much meaning. But that's the truth. That's the case in the 50s. The great thing about Johnny Cash is he was a tremendous artist. He had a purpose in his music. He wanted to lift people's spirits, particularly underdogs, because he'd been an underdog on a cotton farm, and also the whole idea of not having his father's love. He felt he was an underdog, so he was always trying to lift other people up. And he entered country music at a time when nobody else had any more ambition than another hit on the jukebox. But he was trying not only to have hits, but to actually say something with his music.
I wonder if he could be a hit, because I'm not sure radio would embrace him today the way they may have 50 years ago.
Well, no, because again, it's the thing is, though, maybe he would, because this is the only you're probably right, because it's all spectacle. It's getting on stage and it's running around, and it's not a there's not many people who are making music in Nashville that is more than aimed at a jukebox.
It's a very, very different industry. The book is called Johnny Cash: The Life. Robert Hilburn, thanks so much for joining me here today.
Okay, all right, Paul, thanks.
I'm Paul Harris. This is America Weekend.
America.